Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, trying to take stock this week of just a few things that made Veterans Day 2020 unique and special. November 11th, 2020 was a groundbreaking day in one way I don't think I ever thought I'd mention. A new filmmaking technique brought a powerful World War II story to life in a combination of live action and animation that you have to see to truly understand. It's adapted from the best-selling book, The Liberator, by Alex Kershaw. Our troops around the world have access to it, and so do you, as a four-part series that debuted on Veterans Day on Netflix. You've heard Alex Kershaw on this program before talking about Felix Sparks, the real-life hero he wrote about in The Liberator. And before we get Alex's reaction to this new graphic novel on screen, if you will, listen to a portion of the trailer, which you can see in its entirety at hometownheroesradio.com.
My dearest Mary, when I left you to come over here, I was scared of losing you. I'm scared of not coming back. I'm scared of dying.
Let's go!
But I began this war with a group of men.
Hang in there, Captain.
Men who I owed a debt to.
Go! Go!
Captain, you're not ready for discharge. You walk out of here and you'll be AWOL.
They would send me home, sir. I ought to be with my men. Mary, I don't expect you to understand. It isn't my time to come home yet.
It was me, it was the captain.
He came back.
I'm not scared anymore.
Those men, they're the descendants of the powerful Mexican army.
Let's go!
That defeated the French on Cinco de Mayo.
Vamos! Vamos!
They're sons of Texas Rangers who brought the rule of law. They're the grandsons of the greatest Indian warriors to roam the American plains. They're my men.
Those men featured in this new four-part Netflix series, depicted in such a new and revolutionary way, are the ones that Alex Kershaw wrote about in The Liberator. Alex was kind enough to take some time to talk to us about what this project means.
The amazing thing is that I think about all the guys that I interviewed, and I think about Sparks and, you know, beautiful people that are no longer around, and to have them come back to life for such a large audience, for kids, for, you know, there's so many young Italian kids that are really into this show right now. It's trending really high on Netflix in Italy. You know, they're big fans of Bradley James, who plays Sparks. But there's an awful lot of kids around the world that are really falling in love with American liberators and the Thunderbirds and World War II. And they're seeing Americans in a really fantastic light, in the best possible light. They're seeing working class white guys, working class Mexican-Americans, Native Americans, just amazing, amazing Americans. They're seeing what they really did, and they're seeing how they liberated their country. They're seeing how they liberated France and Italy, how they liberated Germany from Nazism, and they're seeing the best thing that America ever did, which was to destroy Nazism. It's a fantastic thing to have, you know, countless millions of people really get into this story and, in a way, validate, you know, what I spent so long worrying about and trying to put into a book. And, you know, I remember when the book came out in October of 2012, I didn't get a single press interview on Veterans Day. I remember sitting in the kitchen, and I'm being really honest now, I remember standing in the kitchen, and I literally almost banged my head against the new granite surface in my kitchen. And I was like, what the hell? Why? These guys were amazing. This is one of the greatest achievements in military history, the 157th Infantry Regiment. What they did was incredible, and I'm like, no one's interested? It took me a long time to kind of reconcile that lack of interest. I thought to myself, what the hell am I doing? I remember going up to talk to my wife and saying, why have I been spending 20 years writing books about World War II and these guys? And is it worth it? Is anybody really interested? And so, cut a long story short, you know, 10 years later, I'm thinking, I'm really glad finally that people are really starting to pay attention. And it's truth. People watch TV and they love great drama. And, you know, the guy that wrote this is one of the best in the business. And certainly when it comes to action, he's a legend. It's Jeb Stuart. He did Die Hard, The Fugitive. He's done an absolutely fantastic job. As I watched the 4 hours, I was like, I hadn't seen it. I was not shown anything. I deliberately stayed out of the production process. I didn't want to. I thought, you know, these people are creative. They want to have their own take. They don't want someone like me looking over their shoulder and saying that's the wrong patch or whatever. I just like, just leave them alone. Let them get on with it. Let them have their vision. And maybe hopefully it'll mesh with mine. So when I'm watching the show, I'm thinking, oh my God, they took that bit and they took that bit and they took that bit. And not only were they very faithful to the main arc of Sparks's, Felix Sparks's, the Liberator's journey, but they were also, there were some things in the book that I was like, wow, where the hell did that come from? When I watched the show, and it was a fantastic example. I was sat there and watching with my wife and in between blubbing because I cried an awful lot. I think mainly because it was very emotional to watch these guys come back to life, because I was very, you know, I was really close to one guy in particular. At least I felt very close to him. And that's a guy called Halliwell. And there's a character in the Netflix show that's called Halliwell. It's not the same guy, but they used the name, which was really nice. And I devoted the book to Jack Halliwell, who's no longer around. And he just pushed me so hard to write the story. He pestered me for a couple of years, called me every 6 months and said, you've got to write a story about Felix Sparks. You've got to see him before he dies. You've got to do this. So if it hadn't been for Jack Halliwell, this would never have happened. So anyway, I'm watching the show and blubbing along and laughing, and I suddenly saw these two characters, and it was a father and son. You know, and a lot of people are going to think, there's no such thing in World War II as a father serving side by side with his son in the 45th Infantry Division, the Thunderbird Division. They made that up. And you know what? They didn't make it up. There actually was a father and son. And it's a photograph in my book. It's one of the most extraordinary photographs. And it's an Anzio, and it shows the father and his son, you know, and the son, I think the father was about to leave to go back to the US. And it's like, I remember when I looked at the photograph thinking, what the hell did they say to each other when they were in the war, you know? So in the Netflix show, there's actually a couple of characters that are in, mainly in the third episode. It's the father and son. It's not the same father and son that actually were in World War II, but it's a father and son. So there's lots of things like that that I loved, because they took the factual history. They were true to the essence of it, but they turned it into drama, which was lovely, you know. It's just really nice to see.
So if I'm understanding correctly, you spent Veterans Day, 4 hours of Veterans Day, watching for the first time your book, which is the true story of so many veterans of World War II, being turned into this one-of-a-kind dramatization that's going to reach a whole different audience from the audience any of your books have reached. I mean, that's kind of like a whole new world for you, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's a whole new world for World War II. It's a whole new world for TV. It's a, you know, very, very, it's the first time it's ever been done with the technique they've used, the rotoscope technique that Trioscope Studios have pioneered. So this is the first time you're going to see World War II shown like this. And in fact, any story, this is the very first time that this has been used. So it's really new. It's very fresh. It's very interesting. And so far, it's doing really, really well. I mean, it's trending on Netflix in the top 10. So far, people are really loving it, you know, especially young people and people that probably wouldn't go anywhere near a World War II book, probably wouldn't watch a black and white documentary on the History Channel. They're not the generation that grew up with Band of Brothers. You know, that's over 20, it's 20 years ago now. I mean, these are people that are teenagers and in their 20s that it just wouldn't come to World War II unless it was something like this, unless it was something that looked a little bit like a video game brought to life, to real life. So, yeah, this is World War II is the most important story of our time. And to get a whole bunch of new people really passionate about it and really interested in it again is, you know, hats off to Cryoscope and Netflix and A&E Studios and all the amazing cast, and, you know, Bradley James, my fellow Brit, the actor who plays Felix Sparks, did an absolutely superb job. Really, really sublime, really, really calm and forceful, and really moving performance. Just a, you know, really, really great actor. So I'm delighted. I hope I don't sound like I'm not delighted, but I am. I'm over the moon, you know.
Well, and because it's a new technique, I'm guessing you really didn't know what to expect because you've never seen anything that was done in this fashion. So as you watched all four of those hours, was there one moment in there that really kind of took your breath away, the way they interpreted something that you had written, something that had been shared with you by these veterans themselves, that the way they brought to life on screen really got to you?
Yeah, I think the my favorite episode is 4 hours, and my favorite episode is the third episode, which I just thought was spectacular storytelling. It was sort of definition of visual storytelling in a really powerful, beautiful way, very, very tense. And it's set in the Vosges Mountains. It's the Battle of Reipersweiler in January 1945. And Sparks lost his entire battalion except for two guys. Actually, one of them is still alive, a veteran, Bernard Fleming, who's 98. He's one of the only two guys that escaped the encirclement of the battalion that Sparks commanded at Reipersweiler. The SS surrounded the battalion and picked them off. And Sparks lost, you know, Sparks had lost, the Liberators had lost his entire company at Anzio, and then to lose a battalion at January 1945 was heartbreaking. So in the show, it was just really, really beautifully done. And the effect of the snow, the visuals, one of the things that the producers have said, and Jeb Stuart, the creator and the writer, have said, to make 8-hour, 10-hour World War II drama, but it's live action, it's going to cost you $150, $200 million, maybe even more. You know, it's very, very expensive to do. And when you try and do it, how can you have big scenes, big battles shown? There aren't any tanks that you can really employ. You can't find 25 Panzers. You just can't create the scale and the epic feel of the story. Even if you had all the money in the world, you can't find the actual real resources anymore. The B-17s, whatever you see in the show, you just can't muster that anymore. So this is probably the only way that you can do it, is to animate it so that you see the live facial expressions, you see the acting of the actors. So you're looking at real actors and action, but the backdrop, how they fit into the scenes is amazing, because you're seeing this vast, beautiful, epic scenes of entire battlefields and mountains, and it's beautiful. You know, you've got artists that are taking great actors, and they're amplifying what they're doing by placing them in beautiful backdrops in incredible scenes.
Well, and I know it's only the first week that this has been out, but seeing how this came together and the impression that it's making and the new audience that it's reaching, I have to wonder if some of the other many World War II books you've written may end up finding their way to this format themselves.
Yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to have the whole lot, you know, year after year. I'd love to, but I think that it's very exciting to think that Thunderbird patch that those guys wore, the 157th Infantry Regiment and the 45th Infantry Division, those guys are being rediscovered and maybe will be better known around the world than they ever have been. You know, there were so many divisions, U.S. divisions, that fought in Europe in World War II. And you know as well as I do that after D-Day, 6th of June 1944, the 36th Division, the 3rd Division, the 45th Division, all those guys that had fought so hard in Italy, they were forgotten about. They were actually disparaged as D-Day dodgers, you know, guys that had missed out on the big one, D-Day, June the 6th, 1944. But by June the 6th, 1944, Felix Sparks had been in three amphibious invasions. You know, he invaded Sicily, he invaded Salerno, he invaded Anzio. They were not D-Day dodgers. They had at least three behind them already by the time that June the 6th occurred. They became the kind of forgotten warriors of World War II and the liberation. And it's a shame, because they were there at the start and they were there at the end. They spent the longest time that you could spend in combat was with the 3rd Division. They were the sister division in the corps that went through France with the 45th and the 36th. The 3rd Division, the 36th and the 45th have certainly the 45th have been forgotten by most people. And yet they spent the second longest time in combat. They had fantastic generals. They were a really, really amazing outfit. They saved the entire Allied bridgehead at Anzio in February 1944. They did so many very, very important things that were forgotten about. And it's great that they're no longer forgotten. It's fantastic that they're no longer forgotten. It's amazing.
Well, you took the words right out of my mouth, but I can't help but wonder as you say that, and you mentioned that there are a couple of these guys who are still living that were part of the 45th Infantry Division. I know it hasn't been very long, but have you had a chance to talk to any of them about their reactions to seeing this?
No, I haven't. I haven't been in touch with any of them. I'm sure I will be. There's in the show, there's a guy called Carl Mann. It's called Mann, and he's the Liberator's interpreter. And he's actually in several scenes. So Carl's still alive. He's a German. He was obviously he was the interpreter because he could speak fluent German. And he's still around, isn't he, in Pennsylvania? And I spoke to him about 6 months ago. His hearing's not very good at all, so he can't do interviews over the phone. But I managed by shouting very loud to have a good chat with him back like 4 or 5 months ago. So. Yeah, I hope they're all really happy with it, and they're watching it maybe right now as we speak. I think I hope they'll be really, really happy. I hope they're as happy as I am.
Well, I think a lot of people will be happy, and I want to say congratulations for having this moment. I know you've worked toward it for a long time, and look forward to seeing more of the same. Anything else you think people ought to know about the Liberator or how they should interpret what they see?
Well, I think it's what's interesting about the unit that Sparks led was that, you know, it drew from the American Southwest, sort of units from Oklahoma, Colorado, New Mexico, that part of the United States, and they had an awful lot of Native Americans. The 45th Infantry Division had the largest number of Native Americans of any U.S. combat division in World War II. When they left the U.S., there were over 1,500 Native Americans in that division, which, as you know, is a lot, an awful lot. And I think over 40 different tribes. It was also had a lot of Mexican Americans, guys that couldn't really even speak English very well. In fact, one of the survivors today from the regiment, a guy called Guy Prestia, he actually had to write letters for a Mexican American friend of his because the guy couldn't write English, and he had to write these letters for him back to his family to get past the census, etc. So yeah, an awful lot. My point is, there's an awful lot of Native Americans, an awful lot of Mexican Americans, and this was about as integrated a unit, about as diverse and integrated a combat unit, an American combat unit, that you could find in World War II. It grew from very, very, very different, diverse immigrant groups. And when you watch the show, you'll see that Bradley James, obviously, he's a white guy, he's playing Sparks. But the of the three kind of key characters that you see quite a lot, one of them is Mexican-American and one of them is a Native American. So we're seeing a very diverse image, a very colored face of World War II here. And I think it's long overdue. I think it's time that people really remember that there are an awful lot of minorities that fought very, very hard. In fact, the most decorated regiment was Japanese American. The blacks in the 92nd Infantry Division, the Black Panthers, the Tuskegee Airmen, so many minorities in America fought and gave everything and laid down their lives for their country, for America. So I think their contributions are often being forgotten, that we tend to see World War II as a white victory for white Americans, and it was a victory for all Americans from all different races and backgrounds.
Absolutely. And our veterans and their stories have the power to unite us still today. That is Alex Kershaw, his book, The Liberator, now a Netflix series. I hope you're going to check it out. We are way overdue for a break, but when we come back, something I had a chance to write this week that I'd like to share with you, and a way you can take it even further. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.